You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Nathan Zagura and Matt Wilhelm here in the Dog Bowl in Berea. Arby's. You can visit them right now for an exclusive.
They have the meats.
They've got the meats, and they also have an exclusive Cleveland Browns Dog Pound Cup for a limited time only while supplies last. Arby's, we have the meats.
We need to find out what kind of cup this is so we can actually let our listeners know. Is it glass? Is it plastic?
It's a sweet cup.
I've seen the Papa John's cups.
It's a
the glasses, I mean.
It's a totally awesome cup, man.
I know it's an awesome cup, but there are different levels of awesome cups. Like, does it automatically become like my drinking cup at home?
I think it's up there, man.
Because I went to at the Orange and Brown scrimmage in Columbus. You know, I went and got my wife went and got a drink in one of the big souvenir cups.
Uh-huh.
It's all red, you know, scarlet rather, with the big Buckeye on the in the side.
And Brutus?
No, just the Buckeye. The Buckeye leaf, we put on the helmet,
okay.
And then inside it says "We are tradition," and I walked it all the way back to my car, then drove it all the way home, and it is my drinking cup.
One of my favorite cups I got at WrestleMania 20 in Madison Square Garden, and it was from the Big East tournament, and it's like one of those mugs that, like, in my experience as a kid, it was my, like, grandmas would have them. Like, it's like an 80-ounce mug with, like, a giant handle that they would put a straw in and drink, like, Dr. Pepper out of, you know? Like, it is the biggest cup ever.
My old drinking cup? Was, and I don't remember what food chain or fast food chain it came from, but it was in promotion of Hangover 2, and it was Gavinekis. No,
Galifianakis.
Yes, it was him with a quote on it, and it became my drinking cup forever. It's him with the sunglasses, with the scruffy hair and the beard.
That's a strong cup.
Oh yeah, I had to do it.
You know what somebody got me, which is you haven't seen Game of Thrones, but in Game of Thrones, like in the medieval times, they would drink out of like. Real goat horns or something that they made. That's what they made the cups out of. And if you watch show, like that's what they're always drinking out of. And somebody got me one of those. It doesn't smell so good in there. I'm not gonna make that my drinking.
It used
cup.
To be on a living animal.
Yeah, great idea, great concept.
Cool.
Appreciate the thoughtfulness.
It'll look good
of
in my
it.
Cupboards.
Fantastic in the cupboard. Unfortunately, they don't have glass doors. But hey, what are you gonna do? 216-578-0850. Again, 216-578-0850. The Browns and the Rams. The Rams, interestingly enough, when you look at their rankings, last in the league in points per drive. Their offense overall struggling mightily on this season. And yet they're 2-3 because they're winning the turnover battle slightly.
They have a guy by the name of Todd Gurley.
They've got Todd Gurley, but they've only had him for two games.
I know.
297 yards of offense per game. That's it. 16.8 points per game. That's it. So they are struggling. Nick Foles completing 16 passes a game. That's lowest in the NFL. They're only averaging 183 yards passing per game. That's it. So they're not doing a tremendous job. Now, they have defensively, that's where they make their money, 19 sacks on the season, and they already have 9 takeaways in 5 games. That's pretty good.
It is very good.
19 sacks.
Plus what? Is that plus 2? Plus 3?
They're plus 1 on the turnovers.
Okay.
But 19 sacks in 5 games. That's why I'm saying this is not a game that the Browns can fall behind in.
No.
Browns are giving up about 4 sacks a game.
No, they can't fall behind because Todd Gurley will literally run the ball 35 times in this football game.
Yes.
And chew up the clock. And as we dig into the stats continually, from a time of possession standpoint, the opponents have possessed the ball for 32 minutes and 45 seconds. So they've won the time of possession. But again, St. Louis hasn't had Todd Gurley for all of their football games. And have had Nick Foles, and in some cases trying to get that passing game up off the ground, but now they've become a very run-dominant team because they know the threat, and they've reaped the benefit of Todd Gurley being the explosive player.
Absolutely, and that's going to, as you said, I think this shortens the game for the Browns a little bit. This is a week where I think that you're really going to see a team, and now teams have done it against Browns. We know they're running for about $1.50 against them every single week.
Wouldn't you?
Of course, but this is a different animal. This is unlike anything the Browns have seen so far this season. Let's go to Bob in New York to lead us off. What's up, Bob?
Hey, good to talk to you, Nathan.
Good to talk to you, too, man. How you doing?
I'm good. Before I get into the St. Louis game, which really isn't the top of mind right now, you know, I've been thinking a lot about the Browns and their players, and I'm pretty frustrated, as we all are, that looking at the percentage of snaps that these highly touted draft choices, number ones in particular,
sure,
and these highly touted free agents are playing. You've got Gilbert at 2%, Irving at 3%, as if, you know, he's in AAA waiting to come up to the big leagues. Manziel, 23%. Shelton, 49% and declining. Bowe, 3%. Hausler, 10%. Hartline, 47%. Starks and Williams are the only guys that are playing more than half the plays on their respective offense and defense.
Yep.
I mean, isn't that unacceptable?
It certainly isn't ideal. I mean, if we're going to be honest about it, it's not ideal. And at some point, you know, you want to see, and we're going to hear from, I know today Jim O'Neill is going to address Justin Gilbert a little bit and the progress that he has made. But yeah, that's an issue. You've got four first-round picks on your team from the last 2 years. Johnny's not playing. Gilbert plays special teams exclusively at this point. Cam Irving is not playing. And Danny Shelton is playing a declining number of snaps, it seems. Now, I've heard he played through some injuries in that game, but everybody in the NFL is playing through injuries. But it is disappointing. And then you look at this defense. The other thing that's kind of scary is, what do these four people have in common? Dante Whitner, Carlos Dansby, Tremont Williams, and Paul Kruger.
33 or older.
They're all not quite that old, but they're all in their 30s, and they're all, you know, not at the tail end of their careers, but they're all guys that are building blocks, making a lot of money, and they're the top four snap players on defense.
It doesn't set you up for the future, does it?
It does not. Chris Kirksey is fifth, so that's your young guy there. Armani Bryant gets down there around ninth. That's another younger guy, but it is interesting.
And you know what's very it is very interesting to see, and it's disappointing to see.
Disappointing.
And as I continually said throughout the draft, you know, prior to the draft, after the draft, I believe a lot of the frustration that Cleveland Browns fans have, A, is simply because the product has not been as competitive as they would have liked or deserved in the last 15 years. I believe the other half of it is them looking around the league and seeing other first-round draft picks being the cornerstones of franchises, and in some cases, reliving opportunities for the Cleveland Browns to draft those same guys who could have potentially played that same cornerstone role here in Cleveland. And we have developmental type of issues with our picks, and we're not getting, and I continue to talk about it, the ROI, that return on investment. We've drafted you number one to be exceptional, to be a game changer for us, and our guys can't get on the field.
Right. And the problem is, you know, at what point do you go ahead and say, hey, we're just going to see Cam Irving. We want to see Cam Irving. We're going to see Cam Irving. At what point does that happen? Because I remember when we went back at the draft and we said, and I remember I said, if we draft an offensive lineman, which I was against because I didn't think it was an impact position or a position of need. And Mitchell Schwartz, everybody who was hating him, has certainly proven to be a competent starting right tackle in the NFL. He did a very good job in this game against Von Miller. But you needed to come out with impact players. And I think what you're talking about was, as I recall from the phone calls and the phone lines, never more apparent than after the Oakland game where you watched Derek Carr, Amari Cooper, and Khalil Mack. And you're saying to yourself, how do we have more swings at the plate, but we don't have one of those guys?
And that was a question that was posed to me in the PNC Bank pregame show to the Oakland Raider game. Who's got the better young nucleus? If they did not have Amari Cooper and they did not have Khalil Mack, I would still put them simply with Derek Carr ahead of the Cleveland Browns because they have their franchise quarterback.
But they also went through the growing pains with him. They allowed him to go through that last year. He was not great last year. They picked, what, fourth overall
this year?
And I think
in some cases, because they have a fan base that has very low expectations of who they are, and they've come to grips with the fact that Rome wasn't built in a day, that they could take losing another season to sacrifice the little bit of success that they developed through the first 6 weeks of the season.
Yes.
To the point where you're competitive in your division.
Yes.
You know, they're going to give the Chargers the run for their money. They're going to give the Chiefs a run for their money. You know, they may challenge the Broncos with Peyton as bad as they are.
They're currently second in that division.
My point.
But they gave him an opportunity. See, we still don't know about Johnny. And Johnny's not helping himself with some of this off-the-field stuff. It is the Browns, I think, given where you are caught in that classic conundrum. And you're saying, I'm going to go with guys that I know have played and guys that I know because it's the short-term fear against the long-term thinking. And what's it's creating a situation that in case you are not able to, you know, turn that around, you're going to have to play these guys. People can say it's a sign, and Satch, my man Satch, just chimed in and he said, it's a sign that the Browns are getting better, that rookies aren't starting because of the players in front of them. That's a sign we're getting better. But I would say it's only a sign we're getting better if you do that and then you're winning and you're successful and that you're getting the return because you've brought in a lot of guys to start in free agency who are not contributing.
Right.
And you want, at some point, I want to see Justin Gilbert. I want to see Cam Irving. I want to see all these guys develop. Now, I think we're going to see more Nate Orchard, which is good. We're seeing more Xavier Cooper, which is good. Duke Johnson, that's good. But more and more is better.
And to continue on that same path, let's fast forward 2 years from now, okay? And say, Kruger's contract will have expired. Whitner's contract will have expired. Dansby's contract will have expired. Tremont Williams' contract will have expired. You've seen very little of anybody that will be the heir apparent at that position because these guys have played the type of snaps that you just rattled off. Do you pay them again as mid-30-year-olds?
No.
Or do you start a bunch of young players that are inexperienced and essentially draft competition and refill again?
You've got to continue to churn, develop, and retain your own key
talent.
It's hard to do.
When they don't play any time, when you don't play. How confident will we be 8-9 months from now when we're talking about returning 5 starters on defense and you're replacing 6 and the same thing on offense?
Right. At some point, the people who want to see these young guys, I think at some point you will see them this year. Hopefully that is a little bit delayed, though, because that means the team is winning. Wallace in Atlanta. What's up, Wallace?
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good, man. How are you?
Hey, I'm fine. Before I get off the phone, somebody please let me know how I can get the Browns Daily Show like I used to get. But
you want this show? You mean this show?
Yeah, I used to be able to stream it, and I can't stream it now.
Just get the Browns app on your phone.
Oh, it's an app now.
You can get it right on the Browns app. You can stream it right off of ClevelandBrowns.com or ESPNCleveland.com as well.
Okay, all right. To get to the point, I think accountability is the main thing that's wrong with the Browns. I think with Johnny Manziel and even Paul Kruger and some of the positions, they say competition is what drove camp. Then do it. Do it. Actually do it. Don't just say it. And Johnny Manziel, how could you, in your right mind, pick this man to be the leader of men? The leader of men on your team. What does that say about teams like Pittsburgh to pick their quarterbacks? All these people that pick franchise quarterbacks, and we pick him to be the leader of men. I just have a real problem with the scouting. I got a real problem with the people we have in the positions that are picking people.
Appreciate the call, Wallace. And, certainly when you look at some of the off-the-field things, being a quarterback involves so much more than just that. And I think that is something that is going to be a big hurdle. But I know this. When we were at that Tennessee game, there was an energy around him. The team responded to Johnny Manziel. And right now, the Browns are 1-0 with Johnny Manziel as a starting quarterback in 2015.
Yep.
So if he performs on the field, it's a heck of a lot easier to be a quote-unquote leader of men because people feel that confidence that comes through you. You played with nothing but great quarterbacks.
Right.
And you always probably felt better, not necessarily because what they did on or off the field. And they had, I'm sure, different leadership styles between Breeze, Rivers, and Rodgers. I'm sure you saw very different styles.
Yes.
But it's because you believed in their ability to make plays when you needed them to that they would lead you.
Yeah, it was the mindset of having a franchise quarterback in place. And for a while there in San Diego, you had, we would literally whiff and not come even like a foot away from LaDainian Tomlinson because we knew he was the franchise, especially in that 05, 06, 07 when he was, 1,500 yards, 1,300 yards plus and 20 plus touchdowns. You literally Olay him next to him because you knew he was your guy and you knew on Sundays to have him healthy gave you the best opportunity to win again and again and again.
And by the way, when you use Pittsburgh as an example, let's not forget that the top two quarterbacks on their depth chart, Mike Vick was out of the league for off-field transgressions and was in prison. And Ben Roethlisberger was into plenty of off-the-field shenanigans. And the only reason that people don't talk about that is
they win.
Because he wins. Winning is what it's about in the National Football League. And until the Browns do that, everything else is going to be an issue for this football team. All right, when we come back, we're going to hear from the defensive coordinator of the Cleveland Browns, Jim O'Neill, who knows he's got his hands full with Todd Gurley and the rushing attack of the Rams this Sunday in St. Louis.